Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here once again with Radio Tacoma's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate, always respectfully and following the optimism that knowing what causes climate change, the human emissions of greenhouse gases, we also know what the solution is. So there you go. That's my cause for optimism. So today I want to talk to you about carbon capture and storage. So first off, what is it? Let's compare just briefly direct air capture. Direct air capture is a system whereby carbon dioxide is pulled directly from the atmosphere. There are a couple projects going on here and there around the world, I believe one in Switzerland, one up in British Columbia, that are attempting to show the viability of this concept. Spoiler alert, it's not viable. There's a huge amount of carbon dioxide, there's a huge amount of atmosphere, and direct air capture is just never, ever going to be a solution to our global warming problem. So how about carbon capture and storage? Well, briefly, here's what carbon capture and storage is. The idea is that why not capture the carbon dioxide at the source, i.e. the flue stacks and related from electric generating plants and possibly other industrial sources. Take a scientific and a technological approach, a technique of capturing that carbon dioxide as it's emitted after the combustion of the fossil fuels. On the surface of it, sounds like a good idea, right? Instead of letting that carbon dioxide go out into the atmosphere, catch it before it goes there, store it someplace, sell it, whatever, a basically good-sounding idea. So let's take a look at a practicality of this. In fact, let's look at a number of practicalities. I'll start off by talking about a plant down in Houston, Texas, a coal-fired electric-producing utility. They installed a carbon capture and storage system there in 2017, and they took it out of service last year. So it was in service about 3 years or so. During that time, they spent $190 million of taxpayer money. That's your and my money on this project. They were slated to get $1 billion, basically, and spent $190 million before they shut down. They were plagued by chronic mechanical problems, and they routinely missed their targets for amount of carbon dioxide that was captured. Partly, worse of all, is the carbon dioxide that they did capture was shipped to a oil field that was in its last gasps, and the carbon dioxide was pumped under the ground to force out more oil. So whatever we had gained in terms of capturing carbon dioxide was lost in part by pumping more oil out to be burned and to create carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, a project only a fossil fuel executive could love. So let's talk for a second about the federal funding aspect of this. There's a quote that I love, says, "No one's life, liberty, or property are safe while the legislature is in session." This is certainly true. That quote, often attributed to Mark Twain, actually a guy named Gideon Tucker, a little-known politician from New York State, but there is a strong element of truth in there. Right now, the federal government and the Biden administration in particular are supporting what I will call massive subsidies to the fossil fuel industry in the form of carbon capture and storage technology, pilot projects, and so on. I do have to take just a second here to comment on what I'll call the brilliance of corporate minds. We have a populace, 60-70% of us are concerned or alarmed about climate change and greenhouse gas emissions. Is that, well, let's take that concern for the environment and turn it into cash from the federal government, which is just exactly what they've done in the past, and they're looking to get even more of it now. Quick aside here, time to raise our voices on this one with our senators, elected representatives, and to the Biden administration saying, we don't want taxpayer money spent on carbon capture and storage technology research because it's just not viable. And I'll tell you some more as we go along here about the non-viability of that process. I will just comment, too, that the fossil fuel industry and their supporters like to complain about support given to developing clean energy while they're perfectly happy to lobby the federal government for their own funds. And there is a good reason why clean energy does need to be supported. There are actually several good reasons, but the one I'm thinking of right now is that we are presently funding the fossil fuel industry to billions and billions of dollars a year. That's in the United States, and it's up in the $500, $600 billion level when we consider worldwide subsidies. And some of those subsidies are in the form of folks bearing the costs of the pollution from the fossil fuel industry. So I don't really have any patience with listening to the fossil fuel industry and their supporters complain about federal support for creating a clean environment. There's an organization called the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis, and they nailed it. They basically said Petranova's shutdown, they shut down last year, highlights the deep financial risks facing the carbon capture and storage projects, other projects that are in the works, and they recommend we just don't do those projects. In that three-year period, the Petranova plant was out of service for 92 days. That's basically one day out of service for every 3 days in service, so not very successful in that regard at all. There's another aspect to this too, and that is that any practical carbon capture and storage project right now is touted as being commercially feasible. It's commercially feasible on a small scale, just in the simple sense that if the carbon dioxide is used to squeeze more oil out of the ground, then it's marginally commercially feasible. But that's it. There's an incredible amount of carbon dioxide out in the atmosphere that we've put out there. And to get it out of the air requires a massive scale, a scale far beyond anything that anybody has even considered. And that scale is absolutely not commercially viable. There is no market for all of that carbon dioxide. If we were to do that, it would have to be done in the form of the federal government, governments around the world paying for that carbon dioxide to come out of the atmosphere. Just not going to happen because of political unpopularity and because why would one country pull carbon dioxide out of the air when it's going to benefit everybody. So not commercially viable at all. There's another negative, another aspect of carbon capture and storage that just points out how non-viable the concept is, and that is that it takes more energy to take the carbon out of the atmosphere than it, in terms of creating its own fossil fuel emissions, than is saved by capturing the carbon dioxide. So I'm going to say that again. We put more carbon dioxide out in the atmosphere using carbon capture and storage technology than is saved with the technology. It brings to mind, perhaps you've read the novel Catch-22, one of my favorites for sure. And there's a character in there called Milo Minderbinder, and he's buying cotton for 5 cents a pound and selling it for 4 cents a pound. And someone asks him how he's going to come out on a deal like that. And he says, well, we'll make it up in volume. So it's just as crazy to talk about pulling carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere when the pulling costs more in terms of carbon dioxide than is gained by carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. The craziness of Catch-22, really. I'm going to quote here for a second from one peer-reviewed research document, and here's the quote. We found that the commercial carbon capture and storage methods being incentivized by governments are net CO2 additive. CO2 emissions exceed removals. Unlike energy generated from solar or wind, for which there is a market, there is not and cannot be a market for burying CO2. No, folks, it's real clear that fossil fuel industry efforts to get money from the federal government for carbon capture and storage is not in our interest. It's in the interest possibly of the fossil fuel industry, but not ours, and we need to say no. Really, the answer is clean energy of wind, solar, and hydro. And I'm going to go out on the limb here for a second, but personally, I believe that next generation nuclear power is also an important part of getting us to a fossil-free future where we have clean and reliable energy. I've talked about nuclear power in other episodes, and I'm not going to talk about it today, but the next generation stuff does show real promise, and it's not something we should say no to right off the bat. A couple of years ago, I took a Stanford course titled Energy Innovation and Emerging Technologies. One of the professors in that course was Mark Jacobson, a guy that I've got a great deal of admiration for. You can do an internet search, find some of his YouTubes, listen to him. He's a smart, thoughtful guy that's done an incredible amount of research. One of the things I admire about him in particular is he's an engineer, not a scientist. Love scientists, of course. Love engineers, too. And here's the difference that I see. The engineers are folks that work in the real world. They apply science. And Mark Jacobson has done that and done an incredible amount of research as he does it. So I just want to quote from him about carbon capture and storage to finish up here today. So here's the quote. Carbon capture and storage increases greenhouse gas emissions, air pollution, and costs relative to spending the same money on replacing fossil fuels or biofuels. Moreover, these carbon capture and storage plants increase air pollution and total social costs relative to no capture. Conversely, using wind to displace coal altogether reduces emissions, air pollution, and social costs substantially. Spending money on wind-powered carbon capture always increases emissions compared with spending the same money on replacing fossil fuels and biofuels with wind. In sum, carbon capture increases or holds constant air pollution, health damage, and reduces little carbon, even without considering leakages. No improvement can change this conclusion, since carbon capture always incurs an equipment cost never incurred by wind, and mostly increases air pollution and fuel mining. End of quote. Doesn't get much clearer than that. So, summing up, do we want the federal government to be subsidizing the fossil fuel industry in an era in which the UN says we're facing a code red in terms of climate change and the future of our climate? The answer clearly is no, we don't. And we need to say that to the federal government. Remember, the least effective voice is the one that's never raised. So if you're having some second thoughts about getting on the phone and expressing your displeasure at the new infrastructure bill, including funds for carbon capture and storage research, get over it and call and say no to this incredible multi-billion dollar boondoggle sponsored by the fossil fuel industry. That's it for today. I'll have some links to some of the stuff that I've referred to in the program today. You can go to ccltacoma.org and you can find those links there. You can also send me an email at john@ccltacoma.org. I'd love to hear from you. Always appreciate your comments and suggestions. And the CCL part there is for Citizens Climate Lobby. I'm an activist there. It's a great outfit. Check it out. There's a lot of other great outfits too. Find somebody that's a good match for you. Get active. Raise hell. And just a reminder too that this program and all locally produced programs on Radio Tacoma, KTAH 101.9, are archived. You can do an internet search for KTAH 101.9 in Tacoma, and you can find under programming the archive of all of those formerly broadcast programs. So that's it for today. Once again, here I am reminding you, as always, live like the mountain is out, and take care now.